You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
It was so weird to have Sandy, the good girl from Greece, end up being the same person doing Physical with a song that ended, Let's Get Animal. But we were all good with that. So rest in peace, Olivia Newton-John. It is Tuesday morning. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and I'm getting a haircut, as people found out over the commercial break. I was telling Luke, I've been going to the same guy, Dan, or as I call him, Dan the Barber Man, for 26 years now. When he was just a youngin', fresh out of barber school, he wasn't, you didn't have, now, since then, he was dating, then a wife and kids. The kids are graduated. He's talking about, we're talking about retirement plans now. And Luke asked, how I was getting my haircut for those 3 years when I lived on Grand Cayman in the Caribbean. And my answer was expensively. But one of the things we take for granted here in Wisconsin is you can still get, you still get your haircut for a pretty affordable price compared to where'd you say you were? DC with the prices there.
Yeah. Washington, DC. That was the most money I've ever spent on a haircut was the summer I was living there. It looked really great, but I was like, wait, you're charging much?
Do you recall roughly what it was?
I want to say I paid close to, because after tip, I was still tipped. I want to say it was close to like $55-$60.
Yeah. Now, this, of course, was, 8-9 years ago in Grand Cayman. So I'm sure the prices have changed. $65 to get a haircut. But I will say, with no offense to Dan the Barber Man, in Eau Claire, but she was worth every penny. Fantastic haircuts. My wife also found a salon there that, again, charged more money than you thought humanly possible. But, again, a lot of talent. It takes a lot of talent to be able to, charge those kind of prices to live on a small island in the Caribbean.
Well, one thing I did not know as well is the discrepancy between a male haircut and a female haircut for the longest time. And that is just crazy to me, because if I really wanted to, I could look through like a newspaper and get a clippings over at Great Clips for like, I don't know, there's got to be a coupon in there for a $7.99, $8.99 haircut.
And it might look like it.
Yeah, you get what you
pay
for. But
you can get it. That's the whole point. You can get a cheap haircut.
Right, but just to have like a touch-up for a female haircut is like $25, which is pretty more typical of what I spend now. But it's crazy to think that there's such a big difference between those.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. It is these kinds of very weighty and serious policy matters that we think the Wisconsin legislature and Congress ought to be working on?
We're waiting on some primary results, and the Wisconsin legislature is taking a 10-month vacation. So what else do you want us to talk about on a Tuesday morning?
Well, that's just it. So what are legislators doing? Well, some of them are being primaried. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss tops on that list, because even though he has, through appointing Michael Gableman, done so much to continue the big lie and the damage that Donald Trump is doing to American democracy, that's still not good enough for Trump's fans. And they're primarying him because he refuses to try to decertify the election, which is not a thing, doesn't exist, not legal, can't happen, wasn't any fraud anyway. Stop it. But they won't stop it. So last night, backers of Voss's primary opponent, Adam Steen, held an event called Toss Voss. And what it was a giant bungee slingshot that was put up on a flatbed trailer behind a pickup truck, and they put Robin Voss's face on several dummies, and what people could, I don't know if they paid or signed up or what they did, but this giant slingshot would then fling the Robin Voss dummy into a field. It's not the same as burning somebody in effigy, I guess, but it's no less ridiculous.
They were going for the rhyme, though. They wanted the Toss Voss event.
Yes, they were tossing him. Good for them. And already they've gotten far more mileage out of this than they deserved, because I saw a report this morning that about 25 people showed up, and goodness knows how many of them were reporters. And so by the by attendance, it was a dismal failure. But of course, you know that thousands upon thousands of people, you know, heard about it through news reports and, you know, radio shows like this. And so consequently, you've got a Speaker of the Assembly who might, you know, we've certainly seen that before, surprising results in primaries where incumbents are unseated. Again, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm not saying it's impossible.
Eric Cantor, one of the most conservative members of the House of Representatives, got primaried from the right, and that's how he lost his seat. So it's right. There's precedent for it. It could happen.
And there was a Democratic speaker, a majority leader, I think, from Washington State that got bounced that way in the 90s, early 2000s as well, if I'm not mistaken. So much of these primaries and midterms hinge on what has been accomplished or not accomplished. And it is really striking what a turnaround there has been in just the past couple of weeks, when it looked like Democrats were toast and that, you know, Republicans were not only going to, you know, make some gains, but maybe it would turn into a rout come November, because the messaging had been, you know, that so little was getting done, even though, again, the clock hadn't run down to zero yet. There were still things to be done. And so now we're getting to conditions in this country coming into the midterms, where by the end of Biden's first 2 years in office, you have the following conditions: 10 million new jobs. We've made back all the jobs lost from COVID and then grown them from there. 10 million new jobs. Unemployment, 3.6%. That's a 50-year low. An 86% drop in the death rate from COVID. The biggest ever infrastructure bill has been passed. The first gun safety bill in 30 years has been passed. Medicare bulk purchasing passed as part of the Inflation Reduction Act. Electoral college reform has been passed. A bill that would codify gay marriage has passed the House. A restart of the U.S. microchip industry passed and was signed into law earlier this morning by President Biden. You had from people that say, you know, will Black voters show up the way that they did 2 years ago? Well, the list for them includes appointing more Black women to the courts than anyone, including the U.S. Supreme Court. Lynching has finally been made a federal hate crime after 200 attempts. Minority-owned business spending, federal spending, increased by $100 billion over 5 years. Sorry, I'm going to cough here. A huge drop in Black unemployment, as you would expect. $10 billion in minority lending, funding for historically Black colleges and universities, a ban on chokeholds and no-knock warrants for federal law enforcement, and a doubling of the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division staff. And yet, despite all of that, when we listed some of those at Up North News over the weekend, one of the comments was about inflation. And I loved it because the comment was, well, a bag of Lay's potato chips in the grocery store is now costing $5. $5 for a bag of Lay's. So I looked into that. You can get Lay's at Target for $3.99. Potato chips have not hit $5. More importantly, it's not just that. Why are you worried about the price of a bag of potato chips when the price of insulin could have been capped at $35? And instead, you know, we're still being gouged because you have people in Congress on the Republican side voting against insulin price caps, voting against baby formula relief, voting against funding for COVID testing, voting against paid leave for families, voting against more consistent election standards nationwide to guard against actual fraud, should it ever happen, voting against extending the expanded child tax credit. All of these things and more have a reporter for the New York Times asking in a column on Sunday, why is Ron Johnson still competitive despite, you know, everything? That's the actual headline. So I wanted to look more at this. Michelle Cottle is the author, a member of the New York Times editorial board, and doing my part to help destroy American journalism by reading things that are normally behind a paywall. I will share some of what she wrote. Sorry, Luke. Were you about to defend paywalls?
No, I find that very funny, and I appreciate the little snark towards the paywall.
Well, look, I, I believe everybody should be a subscriber to things that they read. You know, I pay to subscribe to the Milwaukee Journal, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, a host of news sites around Wisconsin. But I will still tell you, we did this completely wrong. In the earliest days of the interwebs, when Steve Jobs came up with 99 cents per song, I was one of those, along with others, who said, this is what the news media needs to do as well, is people don't want to pay like $50 for a subscription, but if they want to read this particular article, you know, if you charge them, you know, a dime or something. And what we were told at the time was, well, that level of micro purchasing, like 10 cents to read an article, and then, you know, it accrues over time. And then at the end of the month, maybe $8.75 is deducted from your credit card or whatever the case may be. And we were told, you know, that wasn't a good business model. You know, it wouldn't pay for itself. And yet Apple made it work, 99 cents at a time. And I still think that is what not just the news media, but other sites could have done to not have these paywalls that are downright onerous to folks. But anyway, now that we're back here behind the paywall, let's read on. From Michelle Coddle in the New York Times. Of all the political quandaries and questions of the 2022 midterms, one burns especially bright. How is it that Ron Johnson, the two-term Republican from Wisconsin, remains even a remotely viable candidate for re-election? The Trump era has given us so many, let's say, colorful characters. But Mr. Johnson may be the senator who most fully embodies the detached from reality elements of MAGA world, the guy most likely to spend his spare time fashioning tinfoil hats while cruising QAnon message boards. His irrational and irresponsible conspiracy mongering about matters such as the COVID vaccine, the 2020 election, who was really behind the January 6th riots, unsettles even some of his Republican colleagues. Mr. Johnson has gotten so out there that his brand is suffering with the voters back home. His favorability numbers have been largely underwater for the past couple of years. He is considered perhaps the most vulnerable Republican incumbent on the midterm ballot, a tempting target for Democrats looking to keep control of the Senate. But Mr. Johnson is not easy pickings, and the reasons are revealing about today's political climate, especially how voters in a battleground state with serious economic issues and other concerns like a pre-Civil War abortion ban still on the books may yet again wind up hitched to a guy who spends an awful lot of time on embarrassing distractions. And that I'll end my reading right there for a bit, because it's not just those things. It's the very real positions that he has taken. Like, for example, not fighting for jobs for Oshkosh Defense to build the next generation of postal vehicles in his own hometown, you know, by saying, well, it's not like there aren't enough jobs already in Wisconsin. It is that kind of disconnect that, yes, has plenty of people wondering. But what we can't forget is that elections are not decided purely on the issues and whether things are good or bad. Ron Johnson, this time around, is the beneficiary, of a lot of money from billionaires that he helped slash their taxes in the 2017 tax bill. Prior to that, while this was not something that Johnson was necessarily culpable of, the NRA was accused of funneling Russian money into American politics. And Ron Johnson was one of those Senate campaigns that benefited from it, you know, the last time around, you know, back when Johnson promised that he was only going to run for a second term and not a third. Still, Russ Feingold managed to lose two times here in Wisconsin for reasons of his own making, as well as some of these external factors. And so while the national media is saying Ron Johnson is a liability, in the very next breath, they're saying Mandela Barnes might be too liberal for Wisconsin, even though Wisconsin is a lean progressive state from a statewide perspective, if you don't look at gerrymandered legislative maps. That's why this race is going to be so close, why it's going to be a toss-up, and why we have to pay attention to the media narratives and straighten them out when they go astray from time to time. We'll wrap up today's show right after this. You're up north.